Thank you all who've been listening, the new listeners, the subscribers, the reviewers. You're all amazing. I just wanted to give you all a heads up that Daniel has been doing a wonderful job of blogging each episode on the website, www.classactorhack.com. This way, if you hear a certain theater company, an internship, a resource, you don't have to re-listen. You can just go to the blog and you list them all right there. That's your little tidbit for the week. And here is part two of Trey. La 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 la. Jumping back to, you were in this class, you were auditioning for TV film, then what happened?
Then I was just trying to audition a lot, and that was hard because I wasn't being paid. So I was still waiting tables, and I booked this project. It was an indie film called Welcome to New York, and it was a guy named Sean David and Stephen Tyler O'Connor. They were like the producers, writers, directors. I didn't know that the way that it timed out was like, we booked it, but it wasn't going to film for like 3 months. And so then we did a photo shoot and a table read. And so there was a long period of dialogue and exchange before shooting. And so Stephen Tyler O'Connor, unbeknownst to me, was the casting assistant for pilot season at NBC. We were just like friendly because he just hired me. Mm-hmm. So I just got a text. I literally had a meeting with Nicole Valens. She used to be a casting director. She's a producer now, but she used to be a casting director for Bender. And I asked her to coffee and I was like, how can I get in for these plays? Like, I can't get seen. And she was like, truly, like, if you don't have an MFA, that's a challenge. So look up who your aspirational directors are and like ask if you can just be a free assistant to them. Find a creative way to make a name for yourself and be a part of it. I was literally leaving that meeting and I got a text from Steven that was, I got you an appointment for a pilot called Next Caller Please for NBC. It was slated to shoot in New York, but they were shooting the pilot in Los Angeles. So there were four possible recurring roles that they searched for in New York. One of them was one scene, like this, the receptionist. So New York NBC was like, I'm envisioning this as like a Michael Urie type. So Marcia DeBonis was the one covering in New York, and she was kind enough to give Stephen Tyler O'Connor the opportunity to assemble a list of his young, gay, 20-year-old friends. And I was the first person on the list, and she was like, I don't know who this is. And he was like, oh, he's great, like, he's non-union, he doesn't have representation, but I just booked him, and, like, I think he's really great. Marcia DeBonis, to her credit, was like, great, I will spend 4 minutes meeting the stranger, I'll give you the opportunity to put this person in front of me. I got an appointment. I coached with Nicole Valens, went in, and it was at 30 Rock, which was, like, so scary. I'd never had a pilot audition before.
That's what I was going to ask. Had you ever auditioned for something sort of on that scale before?
No. Oh, my God, no. And it was so intimidating. And, like, in the waiting room, it's the 30 Rock TV show poster and, like, Friends poster. So intimidating. This is funny because I know Jay now, but Jay Armstrong Johnson's like sitting there and all these, I think Matt Doyle was, there's like all these Broadway people and I'm like, oh my God, like I can't breathe, I'm so scared, you know? But really my intention was to not embarrass Steven. I just have to do well enough to not get him in trouble. And thankfully Nicole, you know, like the character, the scene was, he was sort of a dick. The character was a dick and not paying attention to the girl, not doing his job. I had come up that like he's reading the Perez Hilton blog and that like he's just not interested in the girl. I was the first person to read, and Marsha, she had this giant 3-inch binder and was like, okay, I have to find the size. She's like, do you have questions? I was like, no, I don't think so. And she's like, I know that the character should be doing something he's not supposed to be doing. And I was like, oh yeah, he's reading the Perez Hilton blog. And she, I'll never forget, she threw her head back and laughed. I was like, that's so funny. Let's do that. And so we did the scene, and at one point I like pulled out chapstick and like put chapstick on and like did a black girl click, you know, I was like, you know, like I just like made crazy choices. And so we did the scene and they stopped the tape, and Marcia, there was a beat, just like started laughing and was like, that was really great. She was like, thank you. And I was like, that's it. And she was like, do you want to do it again? And I was like, well, yeah, I'll do something different. So then we did it again. And I don't know, I just did something different. And she was like, great, thank you. But I didn't know how it worked. So I was like, right, let me do it again. And so then, you know, I left and was like texting with Steven. Like, I think it went well. Like, I hope I didn't embarrass you. Like, thank you, thank you. And then a couple of weeks later, I got a call back. And because I was friends with Steven, he was telling me that the creator of the show, Steven Falk, saw the tape. They sent two of us, I think, from that day. And he was like, this Trey kid is funny, but the character isn't gay, ? And so there was a miscommunication because NBC in New York was like, let's see Michael Urie types.
Right.
But this was a day earlier. They had a whole nother day of appointments for this character. So I know now that Steven had to call all of these clients and say, have your client butch it up. Like, don't play it Queenie. So I got this producer callback, but I was told to do exactly what I did and not to change it. I was like, Steven, I only did Michael Urie because you told me Michael Urie type. Like, if you hadn't said that, I wouldn't have made these choices. And he was like, they want you to do what you did. But so I knew I was the only person playing a gay. And so I did the callback, and the director, Mark Buckland, was in the room, and Stephen Falk was in the room. I think I did it once, and I remember the director was, like, sitting in the back, like, with his arms crossed and, like, wasn't even looking at me. Then Stephen was like, okay, let's do it again. He was like, just do it faster. And he like, looked back to the director and was like, do you have anything, Mark? And he was like, no. And I was like, oh my God, this is going so bad. And so I did it again, and I remember Stephen Falk was like, you look amazing. This outfit is perfect. And I remember in my head being like, don't condescend me. Because I just felt like, oh, I'm not getting this because the director is so uninterested. You're trying to be nice by telling me you like my outfit. Like,
right, you're throwing me a bone right now.
Right, that's what it felt like. So I remember leaving and closing the door and being like, I ruined it. I didn't get it. I remember standing at Radio City crying and being like, I ruined it. Like, I didn't get it. And I now know in retrospect that at the end of that day, they were like, okay, role of Kent, it's Trey, right? Great. Like, there was no conversation about it. And then, you know, it took a long time for the studio and the network to agree on these four roles. And there was a first choice had dropped out and they needed it to be an ethnicity. So then there weren't any ethnic choices. The second and third choice weren't ethnic. So then they had to choose whatever second choice character had an ethnic second choice, but now become the first choice. This is how it works on the studio level.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't, like, if my second choice was an Asian actor, then I would lose the job.
Strictly for that.
Right. Yeah. So Steven had alerted me of that. Long story short, literally on my birthday, I got a phone call from Steven that was like, you got the job. And so then that night at my birthday party, Carolee was there and I was like, you guys, I just booked an NBC pilot. And Carolee was like, excuse me, what? And she was like, what project? And I was like, next caller, please. And she was like, who's negotiating this deal for you? And I was like, what? What does that mean?
Right.
She's like, you had to come in and meet with Harris Monday morning.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. Then I flew to LA and shot the pilot and was Taft Hart lead, which is the way the SAG works is you can be a non-union actor and do one union project, Taft Hart lead. And then you're a must join for the next time you are on a SAG project. So that's what happened.
So then the pilot was shot in LA, but weren't the rest of them shot in New York?
Yeah. So we shot at the Red Studios in Los Angeles, which used to be the Desilu Studios. And when I was a kid, I was obsessed with I Love Lucy.
Oh, that's so magical.
Like, scary obsessed. That when I literally, you guys, when I found out that the studio used to be the Desilu Studio, I like burst into tears. Because I used to pray at night that I would have my own TV show and that it would film on the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour set.
Oh my God.
I literally prayed that. And so I...
Prayer is real.
Yes. Prayer works.
Right.
So I had never been to LA before. I had never even flown that long in a plane. And we were in business class, like flying high. So I'm like on the old Desilu studio filming a TV show for NBC. Like, I just burst into tears. Like, I couldn't believe it. And Jeffrey Tambor was in the show and Dane Cook was the main character.
Amazing.
Funny story is that Christopher Fitzgerald, who's a big Broadway actor, was in the pilot and we all flew out together and we were put up in this really swanky hotel in LA. And I didn't have enough money on my credit card for the incidentals. My credit card was maxed out. And the front desk people were like, you have to put a credit card down.
Oh, no.
And Chris Fitzgerald was like, put it on my card.
That's really nice.
I mean, what a savior is he. Mortifying. But that actually was a humbling experience because then I wasn't like, I'm fucking fierce. I'm in LA. Like, I'm untouchable. I was literally like, this is a crazy opportunity. I literally... and living how the other half live. I don't have enough money on my credit card to be in this hotel room.
Yeah.
And I'm here to work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to do my best here because I don't have enough money.
Yeah. And then, so we shot the pilot. That was in the end of March. You know, they picked it up in May. And I didn't know because my character was possibly recurring. I didn't know if I'd be on the show anymore. We didn't know what the deal would be. And we finally were told that we filmed 5 episodes in total in New York. It was like a mid-season order that we filmed in a Kaufman Astoria across the street from this new show from Jinji Cohan, who was like famous for Weeds, and Stephen Falk, who created Next Caller, wrote on Weeds. So I knew it was his friend. And I read a Deadline article and it was something about prison. And I was like, Netflix. You guys, I literally was like, I'm so glad I'm not on that show. Like, I'm on an NBC show. Like, what is Orange is the New Black? That's so stupid. Then our show's canceled and Orange is the New Black becomes like the biggest thing in the world, which I eventually book, which is crazy. But I was contracted per episode. And I wasn't in episode 2, I was in episode 3, but then the network hated episode 2, so they scrapped it and jumped into production for making episode 3, the new episode 2. And I had 2 lines, so I came for a table read and was so scared. My 2 lines, like, got a huge laugh, and so the next day they rewrote the scene. I had 5 lines, and they rewrote the scene. That became episode 2, and so then each episode, the new episode 3, I had like 2 scenes. And then episode 4, I had 3 scenes or something. And then the 5th episode, I was like the entire B story, but they canceled us. So we didn't film it. And
which, do you mind talking about that?
No. You know, we would film the show in a week's time, in 5 days. Every Thursday, you would have a table read. So we did the table read for this. So we did the pilot, then we did 2, 3, and 4. I guess we filmed 4. So we had the table read for episode 5. They said, we're going to be on hiatus for a week. And the head of Lionsgate came to tell us on the set. And I was the last shot of that episode 4. And it was me and Jeffrey Tambor, which was crazy. You know, I didn't know. I was like, oh, this is great. But a lot of the people that, like, I remember Arden Moran was in the show. And she was on Mad TV, and she's like a common Chelsea Lately panelist, but she was like, this isn't good. And I was like, why? Because they, head of Lionsgate, was like, they're shutting it down for a week because we have a 6 episode order or a 7 episode order. And so NBC wants to watch rough cuts of all 4 episodes we filmed. And then they're going to make a decision to back order or not, because it would be more cost effective to shoot the back order now instead of tearing the set down,
right,
letting the first 2 air, look at numbers, then decide to back order, then build the set again. Because, you know, that's what we were told.
But so people who had been doing this a while kind of knew that there were red flags.
People felt like that could be true, but they felt like, why are they shutting us down? If the question is, they want to order more, why are they shutting us down? And Jeffrey Tambor was whisked off the set. That's how Arden was like, this isn't going to be a good meeting if they're whisking the star off. But then that Friday of the hiatus week, I got a new revision, and they literally took, because I was never a series regular, I was a recurring character. They took a scene with 2 of the series regulars and put my character in place of one of them. So then I had this, like, whole huge scene. And that last day on the set, I finally worked the nerves up, which is so silly, to like ask Steven, the creator, do you think my character like actually likes these people, or is he just really like that crusty and doesn't like anyone? And Steven was like, no, you can't like them, because our backstory for episode 7 is that your character's writing a tell-all book and he's gonna like hating everyone and has his whole demise for everyone. So I was gifted, he gave me this gift of knowing like the everything I'm doing is working. They really like me.
Mm-hmm.
Then, so Friday, I got a new revision, and I was given a whole huge, like, 3-page scene. Then at 8:05, I was refreshing Deadline, because I figured there would be an article saying we were backordered. Because Friday morning,
mm-hmm,
got the new revisions, and they renegotiated my deal. So they're like, we're back up. Monday morning, he's shooting. So, you know, I'm like looking at the line. So I figured Deadline would run an article saying that it's back ordered and this is great. So I remember 8:05, I refreshed, and the main story on Deadline was NBC pulls the plug on Next Caller. And so I read it, and it was like, they're canceling the show before air. It will never air.
And that's how you found out?
That's how I found out. So then I instantly, I guess I emailed Caroline Harris. Harris called Marsha, the bonus,
mm-hmm,
and then Harris called me back and was like, the show is canceled. I just spoke with Marsha. She's mortified that that's how you found out. Steven is making calls to tell everyone. I don't know if he'll call you. I know he's calling the regulars, and I'm so sorry. This is terrible. And then I got an email from Marsha being like, sweetheart, I'm so sorry. I can't believe you found it on Deadline. And then Steven Falk called me. I was just in shock. He was like, they're canceling us. Everyone has to come Monday to clean out the dressing rooms. And I was just like, Steven, thank you so much for like giving me this opportunity. I'll never be able to tell you how thankful I am. Like, you will never know what you mean to me and like what you have done for my life. And he got really quiet. And I remember he was like, fuck you. Like, I was holding it together. Like, I have to go. But I was really grateful for that phone call to like, because I had never acknowledged the fact that he like cast this nobody, you know, and gave me a huge opportunity. So that was a big learning opportunity for me because I was so scared. I remember, like, we would do my scenes and we would do one take and they'd be like, moving on. And I was like, I'm terrible. They hate.
But they just got what they needed so they can
right.
move on.
I mean, now I know, like, one take wonder. It was like,
yeah,
they liked what I did in one take, but I didn't know. So I was like, I'm so bad that they're not even giving me another chance.
They're just going to cut this out later.
Right. I thought it was terrible. So then it was canceled and we went and cleaned out the dressing room. It was hard. It would be interesting in your perspective, but I had a reel of student films and then I had this recurring NBC credit with no footage. And it was like hard to get into rooms because people didn't know me. No one really knew what Next Caller was. If they had heard of it, it was a negative connotation because it was canceled before air. And so it was tough getting into rooms. Finally, like literally 10 months later, I secretly got footage from the show, from the rough cuts. And then I was getting some appointments, but like it was tough, you know? I was doing mailers. Like every 2 months, I would, just like any other business, I sent my headshot and resume and a cover letter saying, you don't know me. I had this recurring role in this NBC show. We were canceled. We don't know each other, and I think we should. I'd love to, if you were casting something, please let me know. Allison Schomer was the only person who responded, and she called me in for some CW pilot. And then I finally got the footage, so then I started sending it with my reel. I knew that I wanted to be on Girls and that I wasn't getting in for Jen Houston. So I was like, how do I do this? And Jen Houston's office didn't do classes. So I was like, I don't know how I'm going to get into this room. I saw they were casting this, like, possibly gay boy next door hipster, 20s. And I was like, I have to be seen for this. So I overnighted my headshot resume and my reel in a cover letter. I didn't know that because I overnighted it, they had to sign for it.
Oh.
So it was signed for at 12:03 or something. It's weird that I remember this stuff. And at 12:35, Harris called with an appointment for Girls. And it was like the next day. So I went in and I knew that because I'm like obsessive, like I did so much research on Jen Houston, that I knew that Marcia DeBonis, who cast me on Next Caller, was the first person to hire Jen Houston as a casting assistant.
Oh, wow.
So when I went in and auditioned, I did the scene once, and they were like, great, thank you. And I was like, Jen, when I should be walking out, I was like, I just wanted you to know, like, I read that Marcia DeBonis gave you your first job, and she gave me my first job, and, like, I just, like, love her, and I'm so grateful to that. And she was like, oh, my gosh, Marcia's amazing. She's, like, so good about that, and What was the show? And I was like, Next Caller. And she was like, oh, right, I remember hearing about that. And then they called me in several more times for Girls. And then they started calling me in for Orange. I booked my 7th audition, and it was the 2nd audition for Orange. But it got to a point where, like, I would be walking in, and they'd be like, we're going to get you on the show somehow. It's not about booking the job. It's about, like, being someone the casting office, like, wants to use.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it gets to the point as a caster where it's like, we know this person is good.
She's
the right
role.
Find the right person.
I booked the Carrie Diaries first. A year had gone by since Next Caller, and I hadn't booked anything. And so I started getting my real estate license. I took, I think it's like 80 hours. I don't remember what it is. But I did it over 3 weeks, got my license, and I was hired at a real estate company, and I worked for 3 days. And I literally would go, this is not an exaggeration, I literally had an Annette Bening breakdown in American Beauty. Like, that's me being funny, but I literally would come home, lay on the wood floor, sobbing, because it felt so wrong. But I was like, I have to get a job. Like,
right.
I can't live anymore. Like, I have to have a job. And while I was in real estate class, I got the audition for The Carrie Diaries, and I got the audition for Orange Is the New Black, and I booked both. And so, and I remember, like, going to these real estate interviews, and they're like, oh, so you used to be an actor.
Oh, God.
And I was like, I can't deal with this. But, like, I had to lie. I couldn't be like, yes, I'm an actor and I'm doing real estate, because I needed this real estate job.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to act like this is my number one priority. This
right.
is what I'm doing.
I
now.
Felt that I had. I guess I could have been really honest, but felt like I wouldn't get hired. So I booked Carrie Diaries, but and Jessica Daniels had called me in for various roles, and I happened to know that episode was directed by Amy Heckerling, who wrote and directed Clueless and Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Look Who's Talking, Who's Talking Too. So I knew her daughter because I created this sketch web series with my friend Marissa, and we would just do sketches. And Marissa was friends with Molly, who's Amy's daughter. So Molly directed one of our episodes, and we shot it in her home, and it's Amy Heckerling's house. So I knew that Amy Heckerling was directing this episode, and it was like a gay character, like an 18 or something. And so I was like, hey, Molly, does your mom have say on these little, like, under 5 characters? And she was like, oh, I don't know, I can ask. The next day, like, you guys call with an appointment for Carrie Diaries. And so I go in, and it was the producer callback. So Jessica didn't call me in for the role because my friend Frank was there. He had alluded to the original audition that I wasn't present for. So I go in and I've never met Amy. But Jessica's like, oh, you know Amy. I was like, oh, hey. So good to see you, you know? And I, like, did the audition, and then, like, I booked it. The day that okay, here we go, because I'm weird. Next Caller was canceled on October 3rd, and I shot Carrie Diaries on October 3rd the next year. So it was literally a full calendar year between jobs. And then I booked Orange is the New Black, like, 2 weeks later or something, and shot that. And then that became a recurring role. So I shot another episode of that. But so it was literally a year between jobs.
Do you just have an obsessive memory for names, or do you keep track of every audition you've done?
I do keep track of every audition. Mm-hmm. I used to keep a journal of like what I wore and what I monologue I did and like what song I did and what the casting person's name was.
Right.
Which I think is really valuable.
I was going to say that's really smart.
Well, like if you come from a musical theater background, it's like you have to know Rodgers and Hammerstein, because if you're auditioning for Rodgers and Hammerstein, you can't sing next to normal. You have to know the canon. And I equally think that with casting people. It is so offensive if you like have auditioned for someone and you don't know who they are. You know, like that is so offensive. So you have to like know who Jen Houston's associate is and who her assistant is, because those are the people that are filling up the cast sheet. You know what I mean? Like the audition sheet.
And that's actually something that was really drilled into our heads.
Really?
So that's why I bring it up.
Oh, that's no one ever told me that. I don't know. Maybe because I knew you, like I knew Kara Lee, you know, like you called me in to be a reader a couple of times for Melcap at the time.
So many actors that I know don't do that. And it's like, wait, who is that? And
Yeah, especially if you're going back in and you're seeing the same person again, like, oh, you know, you saw me for this and they're not going to remember you, but if you can say that, then maybe they will. It's like, okay, this is a person that's been around, that I've seen before, that knows somebody that
right.
I know. That'll make them remember you.
It just becomes a tool. I mean, the people that call you in a lot, like,
mm-hmm.
you do get a relationship with them.
Yeah.
Because the casting person isn't casting the show. They're, like, presenting the options to the director to choose. So they're not giving you the job or not. They're the one that's presenting you to the person to say, hire this person. For then the network to be like, no, we need this person. The casting person is on your side. They're the one that, like, if they... And that happened with Jessica Daniels. She has cast me 3 times now. Jen Houston has cast me 2x. It's like, these are the offices that are like, Trey's great. What will he do with this role?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, will Tina Fey choose that or will she not?
Mm-hmm.
It's up to her,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Something that I want to touch on, because you're so good at this, is just how... I feel like you're really good at these relationships with the people in the business. I always make fun of you for getting coffee with people, but I
a long time ago, because I used to make my status.
Yeah, coffee with so-and-so. I was like, who's drinking coffee with today? I guess I just want to like talk about that in as far as the networking and stuff goes, because so many actors I know are like, oh, I'm not good at that, or blah, blah, blah. You seem to be particularly excellent at that. Does
mm-hmm.
that... I mean, where does that come from?
You seem really naturally good at it.
Honest answer to the question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the idea of networking makes me, like, so skeeved out. And, like, social, like, openings, like, makes me so uncomfortable. But I am aware that I don't think of it as networking, I guess. I referenced earlier having coffee with Nicole Valens, but that's because, like, I knew of her from Data. It wasn't, like, a random casting person that I didn't have the right to ask to have coffee with.
And you're not, like, attacking people at parties and stuff.
Well, I don't think that I'm ever sort of saying, like, what can you give me?
Yeah, it seems like you're genuinely interested.
Curious.
When you go for coffee with people, I tease you, but I know that you're going because you're like, I want to learn more. Like, I want to know your experience. To me, I don't look at you meeting these people and it's a gross thing. It seems
right.
like you're genuinely interested about who these people are. And
that's like the code, because
you know?
I remember when I was curious about getting into TV, David had a friend who had done tons and tons of national commercials. And I Facebook messaged her and was like, hey, I want to do that. Who do you recommend knowing? Her response was like, you know, I don't know. Like, the business is constantly changing. Like, I can't really help you. And I remember being so put off by that. But I realize now, when I should have, like, if I really wanted her knowledge, I could ask her to, like, have a coffee with me and be like, tell me your path.
Yeah, your experience.
Don't
yeah.
tell me, like, you. I can't ask you to tell me what to do, but I can hear, like, how you started and what clicked for you. And then, because then you'll start mentioning those casting people's name. Everyone loves to give advice,
mm-hmm.
and everyone loves to talk about themselves. And then you can get all these gems. People just
right.
drop gems.
Right. Nobody's like handing you a shortcut on a silver platter.
Right.
Like, but through conversation, you can learn where you need to be going,
right.
what you need to be doing.
And it's interesting. I don't know that my experience is networking with people over coffees, but like, but somehow I feel like when you go into an audition room, you can gauge what the leeway is to have a conversation. Sometimes that's not appropriate. But if it is, like, you're still just people sitting in a room, you know what I mean? And like, the more you sit in that room with that one person, then you have more ability to sort of be like, what's going on? Like, how?
Yeah.
Do you feel like film is easier in the room to be a little bit more like, hey, don't we know somebody? Or is it the same as a theater audition?
Well, my opinion is that it's not.
Oh, okay.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
And maybe my opinion will change. But I feel like in theater, oftentimes there are more beings in the room.
Yes.
Because nowadays, a lot of it is just like, we're going to put you on tape and the creatives will watch. But like, if you're going in for like a theater, there's going to be the artistic director possibly, and like the director and the casting people. So there's more people. So there's more of a, like, they're probably going to be talking when you enter. So there's more time to talk. Then like when I auditioned for Todd Solondz for Wiener Dog, he was present both times. And that was unusual for me. And he just wanted to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally we talked for about 4 minutes before each audition. And I spoke with Jessica Daniels, the casting director, about that later. She was like, I learned things about people, the actors I have known for 10 plus years. I learned their deepest, darkest secrets that I never even knew, because that's who he is. He wants to know, and he asks the questions to get to the heart of these people.
So it just depends on
who you're in. It depends on the room, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason I, just because there is more people, I would be more intimidated.
That's what I would be the same way.
Really?
And I feel like with TV film, it's so much clearer. And this is when the audition is. We go in, we can talk, and then you're going to turn on the camera and then I'm doing my thing.
Right. It really depends on the room and how they're running the room. But to me, on-camera auditions are a little less personal. They're a little more in-person.
When did you sort of have the shift of being more comfortable or more confident as an actor? Just hearing you talk, it feels like there was a switch at one point of being Annette Bening and then now you're not.
Yeah, I was incredibly insecure during Next Caller. I happened to be doing The Artist's Way at the time. If you know, like, I would totally recommend that book. I think it's 12 weeks and it's all these exercises and you're encouraged to write morning pages, 3 stream of conscious morning pages, just to get all these voices out of your head. So I was actually doing that during Next Caller. I was really insecure and I didn't trust myself. And now in retrospect, I see like I was delivering, but I didn't know, you know, like I just didn't have any confidence. But I don't know. I remember on Orange Is the New Black specifically, like that's such an actor set.
Mm-hmm.
And the directors were like so actor based that I remember the line producer when I did the second episode, she grabbed my arm and was like, you are such a good actor. And I like went to my trailer and cried. Like it just was so moving to me that she took the time to come and say that to me. She didn't have to say that. Really, to answer the question, there's a man named Jack Plotnick. He's an LA-based actor. He's directing the musical Disaster, which is going to be on Broadway. But he comes to New York. He does these workshops. He created this non-fear-based, non-result-oriented approach to acting. And someone recommended him to me, and I went. And he has like these crazy star people that like are part of his following, like Sutton Foster. And he has these affirmations and it's sort of like self-help in an acting point of view. And it really is just sort of like, I release and destroy the need to get it right. I release and destroy the need to impress these people. I am enough. It's just all of that self-talk. So then it isn't about, did I please you?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, well, all right, I'm just going to like have fun for myself. You know, that really, I think, truly was where the shift was.
Tell me his name again.
Jack Plotnick.
And does he have books?
He has a book on his website and it's free. It's like an ebook. And I would totally, I mean, I recommend it all the time to ever. And his website's jackplotnick.com. It truly changed my relation to acting.
Mm-hmm.
100% completely.
Yeah.
Because there, I always had this need to be affirmed. And so it's constantly trying to quiet that voice. On set, the Carrie Diaries, like I knew Amy and she was affirming, but it was like a different environment.
Do you find that these things or these practices that you have, do they help in the moment or are they just sort of a thing that you do all the time that helps you over time?
So that's a big Jack Plotnick thing is he talks about there's that internal voice that's always going. He calls it your vulture. It's always there. The minute you get an audition, like I still will read the description. And I'm like, how am I not this? How am I not right? It's the first thought that comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true for many actors. You can't quiet that voice in the 5 minutes you're sitting in the waiting room. Like it's a constant practice
of
being kind to yourself. And like he has these affirmations that you have to like practice them a lot.
Because in reality, like, a better way to think of it would be like, how am I the interesting version of this?
Correct. And that's right. That's definitely TV film.
Yeah.
Like, because Next Caller is a perfect example of that. Like, that character was not written the way I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired me because it was an interesting choice. When the show was canceled, we got to go into the writer's room that Monday when we were cleaning everything up, which was, like, so sad, but so amazing and such a gift to see a writer's room. And they had, like, you know, the little index cards per all the characters.
Cool.
And my character had double the amount of index cards. I have pictures still on my phone of Dane Cooks, who was the number one of the show. And then you could see the story plots. I know. I mean, it was like, that was really hard, actually, because I knew that if the show had been picked up, I would be bumped to a regular. Releasing that, like, what that could have been for myself. And so much of it is like, you write a pilot and you have an idea. It's a collaborative art. You know, it truly, truly is collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're going to hire the person that's interesting that inspires them to write more for the character,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Did you enjoy the aspect of not knowing what was coming? Or, like, not knowing where your character was going and sort of going with the flow?
Yeah. And it was really weird and scary because I, you know, I knew that from the pilot this character didn't like this main girl. You know, then it shows up that he, like, doesn't want to be doing his job at all. So then I was like, okay, what are, like, I came up with a whole list of things to choose. So I was like, I'm going to file my nails here. I'm going to knit here. I'm going to have a lint roller. They were welcoming of me, like, the props department. I would say, I want to do this, and they would do it for me. So that was amazing. And not knowing where it was going was interesting. Because in the theater, you're like, okay, I'm playing Blanche DuBois. So I know that Jessica Tandy originated this.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the movie. I know I saw this amazing production with Cate Blanchett. How will I ever do this?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In TV film, it's like, this is for me to create. I can't do it wrong. I just have to honor myself.
It's not my responsibility to add to the theme of the entire arching thing. I'm going to do my little thing right here, and the editors and the director will guide me and edit it into something.
That's really, yes.
Because in the theater, you're always, how do I add to this production? I know where it starts, I know where it ends, and I have to fill in here.
Yes, and my callback for Wiener Dog, Todd Solondz, was really specific about how each line was to land. He was like, when you upward and flex there, it's like very ironic, and I don't want the character to be ironic. Let me put the irony on it. I remember for Orange, the first episode, the character like had a crush on his boss, and so I had four takes, and so I knew like each take I'm just going to be more and more and more obvious about having a crush on him, and then they'll choose whichever one works.
Yeah.
And that was what I learned from Jeffrey Tambor. That last day on set, he had this monologue, and he did three takes, and they were so drastically different. Like, it was such a masterclass. Like, I just couldn't believe how infinitely different each take was. That really stuck with me, too. It was like, be Jeffrey today. What would Jeffrey do here?
Been an amazing thing to witness. That's really cool.
It was so crazy. But yeah, because the editor really picks. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they pick the performance. So it's like, just giving them as many options as possible, which is so freeing as an actor. It's like, I can't do it wrong. You can just do it a different way.
Right.
And they'll choose. You have no responsibility except for being creative.
Not that you haven't given enough advice already, but we like to end all of our shows, which each of us will have our own hack. So just to leave listeners with a takeaway, it could be a book recommendation, a movie, or just something that we've already talked about, just reinforcing that. Just give a little something for people to take away.
I was thinking about this earlier today, and like everything that Trey has said has reinforced this. And it's that a work ethic is not something that you apply to one thing in your life. It's something that you continually do with everything, and it ends up helping you in your career or in your life. And so in the way that Trey keeps contact with everyone that he has worked with, and that he is a truly pleasant and charismatic human being, when you interact with him, has served him so well. And that's his work ethic helping him out in his life. Everything you do, you should do really well, and it will help you out.
I would want to highlight what you said about, I don't know, if you know someone who's doing what you want to be doing, reach out to them.
Absolutely.
And know their experience. And just try to learn more about them. Exactly what Trey said as far as, you know, you don't necessarily have to say, tell me everything I should be doing. But just target the people who are doing what you want to be doing and see how they got there.
I guess my hack would be like, trust that what is like meant to come to you will come to you. You don't have control of time. Like, to answer your very first question, maybe it was, what do I wish I had known? Mm-hmm. Or, it just takes time. Like, so much of New York, and imagine LA, is being the last man standing, you know? So like, if you really are destined to be a performer or any sort of theater artist, you don't have control of the time. So it's just a matter of trusting the journey of it. Don't be so, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. So like, don't be so attached to each job. If I had booked that first episode of Orange, which was eventually cut from the episode and filmed, then I wouldn't have gotten the recurring character. I wouldn't have booked Kimmy Schmidt if I hadn't had been in for Jen for Girls, you know, and I would have gotten that if I hadn't sent in my stuff. It's like, your agent gets 10% because you are responsible for the other 90%. You have to be in charge of your career and be kind to yourself about the timeline, because we don't have control of the time.
Well, thank you so much for being on, Trey.
Trey, your speech today was so powerful. That's a reference to your Orange is the New Black.
Oh, I didn't even get it. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, that's right.
I want to say that you should subscribe to us on iTunes. You should follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook.
And visit the website, www.classactorhack.com.
And you can email us,
actorhackpodcast@gmail.com.
And as always, you've been listening to Sweet Soubrettes, All That Glitters, from the album Days and Nights.